Hello, folks. How you doing? Greetings from a blustery east coast of Scotland. I just arrived with one of my small humans to spend some time with family for a few days and just got off the sleeper train, actually. I was hosting a Q&A last night in London with Teyana Taylor, who plays Perfidia Beverly Hills in Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another. And it was so much fun. Not just getting to hang out with her, but just getting the opportunity to focus in on her performance, her character, her prep, her relationship with Paul. Real gift, actually. Thanks to everybody who came and some really nice responses from people as well. So yeah, I loved that. Did that. And then we jumped on the sleeper and here we are in Scotland. And here we are with another episode of Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. Thank you so much for joining me. And boy, do we have a treat for you. Four of the key players from the biopic Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, join us to discuss the film. First up, we have the director, Scott Cooper. I love his energy, his enthusiasm, and his personal connection to Bruce and this album. This time in his life is infectious. So we've got Scott Cooper, the director, followed by leading man Jeremy Allen White, who of course stars as Bruce, Jeremy Strong, who plays his manager, still his manager, John Landau, and Odessa Young, who plays Bruce's love interest in the film. I'm not going to lie, I went into this slightly sceptical when I first went to see the film, and I wasn't prepared to be swept up in the emotion of it as much. It is such a beautiful film. It's not a kind of biopic in the sense that we're so used to seeing about, you know, so much performance, and there are performances in it, both in terms of, you know, those kind of big moments. But what we see is the creation of this album, Nebraska, and we see what went into the creation of that and the kind of purity of it and why Bruce felt like he needed to do it and where it came from and what it helped him with. And then also the fact that he is dealing with a breakdown at this time. The film broke me. I mean, I was in absolute bits watching this film. I love so much about it. And one of the things that I really love about it is that it really focuses on the relationship between Bruce and his manager, John Landau, that, as I said, is still a tight relationship. They're brothers, they're family, they love each other. And the Jeremys, Jeremy Allen White and Jeremy Strong, do the most beautiful job of kind of really showing the depth of that relationship. So I loved loads about it. Now, Jeremy's interpretation of the songs aren't available in your local record shop until December. So, hey, we're just going to have to settle for the originals that feature in the film. That's all right though, isn't it? Of course it is. So as we lead into Scott, let's start with Nebraska.
Saw her standing on her front lawn, just a twirling her baton. Me and her went for a ride, and tennis people down. From the town of Lincoln, Nebraska, with a sawed-off 410 on my lap, through the badlands of Wyoming, I killed everything in my path.
Scott, congratulations on this film.
Oh, thank you, Edith.
It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. That means so much to me, coming from you.
Really, really is. It kind of, it's just a beautiful portrait of this man in this time of his life and kind of what he's going through. And I guess I want to start with what was your relationship with Bruce's music, his lyrics, his story prior to this film?
Kind of a profound relationship. My father, to whom I have dedicated the film, introduced me to Bruce Springsteen through Nebraska. And it came to me at an incredibly vulnerable time in my life, as you might expect, as a teenager, and was kind of disillusioned and not sure of his place in the world. And it was almost like being struck by lightning, the power and the intimacy and the vulnerability and the storytelling that Bruce captured on that particular record. And also, it would be a record that I would turn to well before I made this film or even knew I was going to make this film, as I was writing my other movies, something I would listen to later. And it was something that somehow my relationship changed to the album from the first time I heard it as a teenager into my 20s and 30s as I'm writing my other films. And then to be able to actually tell the story of the making of Nebraska, it's such a gift, I have to say.
God, made me want to cry. That's so clear. I mean, clearly that personal connection with it and the love is in this film, and kind of pours out the screen. When you're thinking about how musically then you want to, how much music you want in the film, how much performance you want in the film, but also before that, knowing that Jeremy could do it, because, you know, when we spoke last night and he says, Scott, I said, Scott.
I didn't know that he could do it when I cast him.
Really? But you believed he could find it?
I knew that Jeremy was one of the best actors of his generation. I knew that he bore a striking physical resemblance to Bruce in 1982.
Yeah.
I knew that he had the same kind of humility and the intensity and the vulnerability and, as I've said before, the swagger.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until later that I knew he could sing as well as he did and play as well as he does, guitar and harmonic, and move like Bruce. Because it wasn't imitative. We weren't trying to mimic Bruce, but trying to find his essence, his spirit. I said to Jeremy, you know, we're not making a film about a hero, but we're making a film about a man who's struggling. And my hope is that 5 or 10 minutes into the film, people forget that we're making a film about Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
But seeing him in Nashville pre-recording some of the tracks and seeing him start to inhabit Bruce, and then seeing him on set, whether it was Born to Run, the concert footage, or singing Born in the USA for the first time, or recording My Father's House, it was strikingly profound and kind of spine-tingling. And I mean, I can't speak enough about how he captured it, but don't take my word for it. Ask Bruce Springsteen and John Landau. They'll tell you.
Yeah, totally. It's that idea that you say not mimicking, and it's the psychology of the character and also that thing.
That was critical.
Finding it from the inside out.
Yeah, I try in all of my films to look for restraint.
Yeah.
To look for deeply and rich interior performances and nothing on the exterior.
Yeah.
Because that's something that if you go to acting class or actors who are just starting out, that's the level largely that they're working on. And I wanted something that comes from a very deep personal place in which actors are doing a lot of the excavating work that's necessary to play Bruce Springsteen during this chapter, or the musician Bad Blake in my first film, Crazy Heart. You know, when you have a guy like Jeff Bridges or Robert Duvall.
Yeah.
The 3 movies I've made with Christian Bale. These are people who do very, very deep emotional work, and Jeremy does that too. Interior.
You mentioned those films, and when you look at the films that you've worked on, that you are ticking off some of the best composers the world has to offer across those, whether that be Carter Burwell, Max Richter, Deacon Hinchcliffe, Tom Holkenborg, and Jeremiah on this.
Yeah.
And it's such a delicate dance to create for this around that kind of world of Bruce and his music.
Yeah, when you have a film that's largely based in music, the challenge is score, the underscore, and it has to always come from an emotional place. And I had written in the screenplay that the score would be born out of Terrence Malick's film Badlands, which is the engine that ignites Bruce's deep dive into his life to write Nebraska. Jeremiah Freights, who's one of the leading founders of the band The Lumineers, who also happens to be from New Jersey and, of course, a devoted Bruce Springsteen fan, came to my attention that he had an idea to write the score based simply on Warren Zanes' book, Deliver Me From Nowhere. And we met, and he said, I've heard that your screenplay, you talk about Terrence Malick's Badlands. And I said, yes. He said, I think we use the piano, the Glockenspiel, which Bruce uses in Nebraska. Very light strings, but we're scoring Bruce's emotional state and doing it very sparely. And I said, that's exactly how I heard it. And as it turns out, I think along with the New York Philharmonic, some of those players, he does it beautifully and lightly and tenderly, delicately.
Yeah.
Really scoring Bruce's emotional life. And I hope it does it in a way that is supportive of the emotional foundation of the movie.
The idea of almost composing a book to a book. It's such a beautiful idea, isn't
well,
it?
Well, he said because he knew, of course, Nebraska well. It's an album that's influenced many, many musicians.
Yeah.
Because they've told me so, even before they knew I was making this film. And when you read Warren's book, I think it's so intimate and personal and honest and searing that knowing that it's based around Nebraska and how emotionally charged that is, that you kind of have to pull back and get out of the way. And musicians are not like most of us. You know, they hear things that we don't hear, and they're able to compose things that they hear in their heads.
Yeah.
And then move us on an emotional level. And I think that's, I mean, I feel certain that that's what Jeremiah has done with the score.
Yeah, it really does a beautiful dance around that kind of...
Thank you. It's an incredibly hard film to score because there's so much music.
Yeah.
How do you give the film an emotional musical signature that stands apart from, you know, one of the great records of the last 50 years and do so in a way that you almost don't feel it?
Yeah, exactly. And also knowing when those moments are where it needs no music.
Yes,
and
then when the silence is so important.
Yeah, and you also have that you know, those moments in the film where it's Bruce is a child, you know, in terms of, so you not kind of falling into tropes of, you know, kind of period sort of reflection in the music as well.
Yes.
That's
we spoke at length about that. It's funny because when Bruce Springsteen heard Jeremiah's score and he saw the film, he's like, that's how I envisioned the score. That's how I heard it. I don't know if I've told Jeremiah that, but I just remembered, how much Bruce really, I mean, Bruce really loves the film, but he, as you know, but in particular, Jeremiah's score.
Be wonderful for you to think that not only have you created something that so many people are going to find joy and entertainment and so many things in, but for you as well, it's kind of given you an opportunity for this personal thing, but also what it's given Bruce. Last night when he talked about how you built the old house and, you know, how he goes there in his dreams.
Oh, yeah.
That's profound. That's unbelievable. The reaction that he's had to this film, you must be so proud of.
I'm incredibly proud, and I'm so grateful for Bruce allowing me to tell this story. Bruce doesn't allow anybody to tell his stories, in particular this one.
Yeah.
As John Landau said to me about Bruce, he said, Scott, this is the first time in 50 years he's handed the wheel over to anybody else. I suppose now that I'm reflecting back on it, in the beginning it was about excitement that Bruce is going to allow me to tell the story.
Yeah.
But now that I've made it and I'm actually in a more reflective mood, And I think about what a high wire it really is to make a film about Bruce Springsteen, and certainly Bruce's most challenging and personal moments, that almost everything can go wrong. It almost feels like, look, it's a miracle that any movie gets made, but and it's so very hard to make a good film. And the fact that Bruce loves it as much as he does, and John Landau, and now that we're taking it out into the world, I mean, it's really a true gift, because it's been an incredibly hard personal year for me. My father, who introduced me to Nebraska, died the day before I started shooting the movie.
Oh, Scott, I'm so
and,
sorry.
And his spirit, thank you, Edith, kind of carried me through the movie. And then in the last week of shooting the film, so often you'll shoot a couple of scenes on one day. We were shooting the big concert sequence of Born to Run, as well as the very end of the movie where Bruce reconciles with his father. And I get the devastating call that my house is, like so many others, burning in the California fire.
Oh, man.
So this movie is particularly charged, and Bruce moved me and my family into his home in California until we got on our feet. He replaced my daughter Stella's guitar with one of his. So it's been one of the hardest years of my life, and now like the best. And I suppose that kind of sums up life, where you can have such hardship, but also have such joy and so many gifts given to you by so many people around you, whether it's Bruce Springsteen and Jeremy White and the cast and the crew, 20th Century Studios, or you know, Bob Iger, the folks at Disney, who have just really helped me and my family through the worst of times. So this is really what life is, right?
Wow.
It's all ups and downs, and to have this film is put me in a very reflective space.
I bet.
Yeah.
I think reflection as well in the film, one of the beautiful things in the film, many beautiful things, is the relationship you mentioned, John Landau.
Ooh.
And Bruce. That's almost like a romance in the film.
It's a love story. It's the central relationship in the film. And as I mentioned to you earlier, I'm in the hotel here at 1 o'clock in the morning chatting with Bruce and John Landau. And the relationship between these men is exactly as it is now as it was when they first met. And John Landau is much more than a music manager to Bruce Springsteen. Mm-hmm. Artistic collaborator, father figure, as you see in the movie, part-time therapist.
Yeah.
He's a man who is a protector of Bruce's artistic integrity. And I've said this also, we would all be better off if we had John Landau in our life. And, and to see these two men form the emotional spine of the movie and be a love story, which you don't often see in movies.
Yeah.
But know that it comes from a very honest and authentic place. It's remarkable that John Landau said so famously in the early 70s that I've seen the future of rock and roll, and his name is Bruce Springsteen.
And thank God we still have him.
Thank God we still have him.
If only there were more Bruces in the world, please.
Bruce speaks for a lot of us, Edith,
who are
suffering.
Yeah.
You know, we're swimming through some dark waters in the United States at the moment. Thank God for Bruce Springsteen.
What a perfect place to end, Scott.
There's a place out on the edge of town, sir, rising above the factories and the fields. Ever since I was a child, I can remember that mansion on. And the day can't see the children playing on the road that leads to those gates of heart and steel gates that completely surround the mansion on the hill. At night, my daddy take me and we ride through the streets of a town so silent and still. Park on a back road along the highway side, look up at that mansion.
Mansion on the Hill by Bruce Springsteen, rounding off the first part of our Springsteen Deliver Me From Nowhere special and leading us into the next with the man who plays the boss, Jeremy Allen White. We'll kick off the conversation with My Father's House for reasons which will become clear.
Last night I dreamed that I was a child, out where the pines grow wild and tall. I was trying to make it home through the forest before the darkness falls. I heard the wind rustling through the trees and ghostly voices rose from the fields. I ran with my heart pounding down that broken path with the devil snapping at my heels. I broke through the trees and there in the night, my father's house stood shining hard and bright. The branches and brambles tore my clothes and scratched my arms, but I ran till I fell, shaking in his arms.
Jeremy, I said to you, yes, just how extraordinary this film is in your performance. Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. It really, really is.
Thank you for saying that.
I wondered if there was a particular song or lyric that was particularly helpful or insightful for you in either in prep or even when you were, you know, in the midst of this.
Yeah, I think sort of my North Star while making the film, to get back to, like, I think what is at the core of the film was my father's house. I think, you know, the film is about many things, but I think that sort of like longing for connection in this case, you know, with Bruce's father, but really what I hear on that record is like a longing for connection generally. And, you know, we're with Bruce in this very lonely period. He's like kind of hanging on so tight. He has this moment towards the end of the film of catharsis, and then is able to connect and be like honest and present with his father and available to his father. And so for me, that song in the process of making it, and I remember the first time when I was recording it, I felt very close to Bruce, you know, for the first time in this process. And I remember calling my dad after we left the studio in Nashville, because what I hear in that song is it's longing. And there's also like a cautionary tale of, God forbid, these things get lost,
yeah,
and you didn't have the opportunity of some sort. And so that song was deeply affecting and I think like centered me when we were making the film, if I felt like I was ever getting off track or something like that. Yeah.
How did it feel being in a recording studio? Did you feel like a rock star as a kid?
Yeah, it was like, as we were at RCA in Nashville, it's very storied, you know, studio. Getting stories of Dolly Parton backing up a pink Cadillac through a wall, and Elvis was in there and made the Sun record in there, which is a big inspiration for Bruce and for Nebraska. And it was nice. I've been so lucky. I think I spoke about this a little bit the other night, but to have a shared experience with the person you're playing, even if you're doing it at a much lower level and, you know, they're not your words, there is something that really unites you with the person you're playing when you know they know this view that you're looking at. This is like very familiar to them. So I found that experience really nice and helpful. I really enjoyed that part of the process.
With music in general, does it Is it helpful for you as an actor? Do you use music in any way, shape or form to kind of help prepare for roles or, you know, get in the mood for things? Or is it something that's too almost emotive in a way that...
Sometimes if I'm lucky, I'll be able to put kind of a playlist together.
Yeah.
That I think puts me in like a kind of space that feels, you know, correct for what I'm doing, but it's not a rule.
Yeah.
If the music like finds me at that time or around that time and I think it could be of use or I recall a certain thing, you know, I'll try to put something together. And with this, it was really nice because, you know, I made a playlist for this one, obviously. And there's a lot of Bruce on there, but also a lot of his inspirations.
Amazing.
And just songs that gave me a lot of, like, I guess that feeling of longing and emotion in the voice. I think, you know, I was listening to so much Sam Cooke and Otis Redding because they're just such, especially live, there's so much emotion in their voices. And Bruce has that too.
Yeah.
And that's when I find... music to be the most compelling when an artist gets really lost and you can tell maybe this wasn't planned.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
very
yeah.
in the moment, you know.
Yeah, experimenting with it,
yeah.
for sure, yeah. Thank you for your
sweet.
Time.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you so much.
In a man stand or dead dog by the highway in the ditch. He's looking down kind of puzzled, poking that dog with a stick. Got his car door flung open, he's standing out on Highway 31. Like if he stood there long enough, that dog get up and run. He struck me kind of funny, some kind of funny suddenly. Still at the end of every hard day, people find some reason to believe.
As featured in Springsteen Deliver Me From Nowhere, that's Reason to Believe by Bruce Springsteen, concluding the second part of this soundtrack and special with the wonderful Jeremy Allen White. It was such a treat to get to chat to him. I'm such a big fan of the Bear. Next up, Odessa Young, who plays Faye Romano, a kind of encapsulation of, I think, a number of women Bruce dated at the time the film is set. That is not kind of laid out or fact, it's just my interpretation. But as you'll hear from Odessa, so much of the character is based in truth. Odessa, you're absolutely wonderful in this film. Congratulations.
Thanks.
She makes a real impact on so many kind of areas of it as well. What was the, I guess, what was the appeal for you for this role?
Well, Bruce. I mean, obviously, like, yes, also Scott, also Jeremy, also just the team in general. But the first thing I knew about it was that it was just a Bruce Springsteen biopic. I found out about the project before Scott even came on to direct it. So it was just kind of floating around in
wow.
the ether. And I'm a massive Bruce fan. So I was following it very closely.
And were you aware of kind of, at what point did you become aware of the kind of, the specific nature of, you know, it's not a typical biopic in terms of it's a beautiful portrait of this man at this time.
Yeah.
When did you become kind of aware of that and your particular role, really?
I can't remember if it was part of that initial announcement that it was going to be Warren Zanes' book.
Yeah.
But knowing, at least when Scott came onto it and he was adapting it, knowing Scott's work, I knew that it was not going to be a typical biopic.
Yeah.
And also knowing that it was using Warren's book as the material, and that that was about this very, very specific period of Bruce's life that he really hadn't talked about in great detail yet.
Yeah.
That was definitely a tip off of like, oh, okay, I think this is going to be a little like left of kilter a little. Go ahead.
And then what's your jumping in point to the character? Where did you start with her?
I started with the script. I think that Scott had a pretty clear idea of who Faye should be. And she morphed a little bit. There were scenes being added while we were making the film that were kind of clarifying her a little bit, which was so helpful and brilliant to kind of, you know, and also kind of scary as an actor when you start getting new scenes out of it and you're like, well, I have to, this is a bit different. but like really beautiful stuff. And he was also telling me about why he was adding them and what he was doing with these scenes. And like, for example, the Dinah scene, that was not in the original script that I had read.
Way.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, a version of it was, you know, but the really specific, the directness of how she speaks with him in that scene was maybe not so fleshed out yet. And then reading that scene, honestly, probably like a week and a half before we ended up shooting that scene, was kind of like, oh, I know who she is now. I know what she's fighting for. And so that, just using his script, because he had had all the conversations with Bruce about who that person needed to be to represent this time.
And for people who haven't read the book, who is Fi?
She's not in the book. I think that she's kind of this, you know, she is imagined to be this person who introduced the idea of Bruce's maybe romantic or family future to him. She's a single mother. She has had a failed relationship that gave her a daughter she loves very much. And she, you know, I think Bruce sees maybe a version of his future in his relationship with Faye. And for, you know, the reasons that he is making this album, which are not very nice reasons, you know, these are like he's exercising something, he's trying to purge something, he's trying to fix something. For those reasons, he can't quite engage in the future that she can imagine with him at that time, which is that beautiful tension that we all know in relationships. You know, this isn't a story about like someone getting too famous to be able to have a regular relationship. Yeah. Because as we know, he went on to have one of the greatest marriages in music history. And I think this is just about, you know, two people being at slightly different stages.
Because he was so present on, you know, on the shoot, you know, he was around all the time, which must have been slightly disconcerting. But did you speak to him at all about, you know, this character that you were playing, how he felt about her, your interpretation of her, Scott's interpretation of this character?
Not specifically about the character. He was around a lot and he was so generous in what he was offering to us. And I know if I had asked him specifics, he probably would have gone into them. But I think that he was always so respectful of what we were going to do with the parts anyway, that I don't think he wanted to kind of hone us in any way. Yeah. But I remember, you know, his reaction to the breakup scene, which was added because of a conversation that he'd had with Scott, was really beautiful. And I remember, you know, coming out of doing a take of that and taking a little breather in the parking lot. And he was saying, you know, someone really said that stuff to me. And it's really nice to kind of see it be, you know, represented in this way. And I think he was, I won't speak for him about what that meant to him, but I can imagine that he's standing there as he is now and thinking about, what if he hadn't learned that lesson?
Yeah.
But he did, and that's why he's here today. And I think that's a really beautiful thing.
I just love how much he opened himself up, his life up to you all to,
I know. I mean,
to tell his story.
I'm extremely grateful.
She loves the Stone Pony.
Yeah. I mean, have you been?
I wouldn't love the Stone Pony.
The Stone Pony's a great time.
Was it fun to kind of like shoot there? Because I did a thing with Bruce and Jeremy last night, and Bruce was just saying how the place has not changed. You know, it's kind of, so, you know, he still pops in there every now and again.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff. What was it like to shoot?
He was there on set. He like, I walked in one day and he's sitting there and he like walked behind, it was empty. You know, we had the whole thing for the day's work, and he just walked behind the bar and got himself a beer out of the fridge. Like he owned the place. Yeah.
Kind of probably
he's kind
does.
Of an honorary honorary owner at this point. Anyway, it's the energy of it is you can't replicate it.
Yeah.
You know, there was no way that we could have gotten that feeling in a studio or on a stage. I think that it needed to be the Stone Pony because the people, you know, it's like you can see it in the way that the background actors perform in that scene.
Yeah.
They're at a show, they're at a gig.
Mm.
Like Jeremy and, you know, the Cats, they were playing on stage. They were playing live. And everybody's there, sweaty. You're smoking those fake cigarettes. You're drinking those non-alcoholic beers. And if you do that enough, you start to feel like you're smoking real cigarettes and drinking real beer. Yeah. And, you know, it's loud and your feet are getting trodden on. Yeah. Like, it's real. It's very, very real. And, you know, even though I haven't ever seen a real show at the Stone Pony, I kind of count that as like, yeah, I've seen a show at the Stone Pony, definitely.
Scott's written such a great part for you, and your performance is just, it's so beautiful and so effective to Jeremy's performance, and I think the whole kind of story and how we relate to it as well. It's brilliant. And can I say congratulations on Black Rabbit as well?
Oh, thank you.
I loved it.
Oh, cool. Great.
I watched it all.
So
I couldn't just like feed
me. It's
feed
a binger,
me.
Isn't it?
So good.
Yeah, yeah.
Congrats. Yeah, very. congratulations on this. It's a really beautiful performance. Thanks, Odessa.
Thank
great
you
to
so
chat
much.
To
so lovely to meet you.
New Jersey turned back. I don't know when I. Neath the refinery's glow. Out where the great black rivers pour. License registration, I ain't got none, but I got a clear conscience about the things that I've done. Mr. State Trooper, please don't stop me.
More Bruce with State Trooper. Thank you so much to the wonderful Odessa Young. But we are not done yet, oh no, as Jeremy Strong discusses his role as Bruce's manager, John Landau. Should we fire up another Springsteen classic? Ah, go on then.
Hey little girl, is your daddy home? Did he go and leave you all alone? I got a bad desire. Tell me now, baby, is it good to you? And can he do to you the things that I do? Oh, no. I can take you high.
Hey, Jeremy, how are you?
Good.
Congratulations on this role, on this film. It's a, I think I said last night, it's a really beautiful portrait of this man and those relationships that kind of surround him at this time in his life.
Thank you.
How did the project present itself to you?
You know, I had known Scott. We'd worked together a long time ago, and you know, we'd stayed connected over the years. I remember having an experience with him that is the kind of experience that I like. He creates an environment that is very. It has a lot of trust and latitude. And he called me up and said he's making this film and asked me if I would play John Landau. And, you know, I did a deep dive on John. He wasn't someone I was really familiar with, but I did know the album Nebraska, and it was an album that I've always loved and listened to 1,000 times. And I felt that this was a love story between these two men. Mm. And the more I learned about them, the more I learned how deep that relationship is and how central it is to Bruce's work in the last 50 years. You know, and we talked about this a bit last night, but you, as an actor, you get granted access to these worlds.
Yeah.
And this one was just a kind of glorious world to be given access to.
I love how he's so present for and with Bruce.
Yeah.
And kind of almost kind of quietly just absorbing what he needs and what he's asking for.
Yeah.
And then when those moments arise where it's really called upon him to defend him, to, you know, protect him, it's just it's so powerful.
Oh, thank you.
In those moments, and especially in those kind of meeting rooms with those record company execs. It's really powerful.
Yeah.
That's a lovely journey to take.
I love those different aspects of John. I mean, when he's sort of artist-facing, he's an incredibly sensitive, intuitive, incisive, delicate, steadying presence.
Yeah.
When he is facing the music industrial complex...
Yeah.
He's, you know,
He calls Bruce boss, but Bruce calls John King.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So like he's a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
And was already, before he started working with Bruce, he was the preeminent rock critic in America, mm-hmm. founded Rolling Stone, the founding rock critic of Rolling Stone with Jan Wenner, and,
wow.
you know, knows as much about music as anybody alive.
Mm-hmm.
Where were we?
Yeah, did you get to spend time with John, and what was that like? He's such great company.
Yeah, he's the best. I spent a lot of time with him and with Bruce. You know, I mean, I think you're as an actor, you are a sort of detective and a kind of investigative detective.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of work you have to do on your own to give yourself a foundational understanding and a very imperfect mastery, as best you can, of the world, of the person. And then I think once you have that, if you're lucky, you can spend time with the person and, you know, ply them with a million questions.
Yeah.
And, you know, one way that John was really instrumental and Bruce was their availability to me and to Scott and to Jeremy while mm-hmm. we were filming. 'Cause you're trying all the time as an actor to make things as dimensional and textured as possible and fill in the blueprint of a script mm-hmm. and make it specific and embroider things in a very specific way to create a sense of, you know, like your reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they helped, you know, with that. One of my favorite things that happened was the scene where John goes to Bruce's house in Colts Neck before he takes the road trip.
Yeah.
The scene as scripted was a conversation we had on the edge of the bed, sort of checking in with Bruce, being concerned for his well-being, mm-hmm. but expressing solicitude and support. And I felt, knowing these guys, how much happens that is unspoken. Mm-hmm. And I remembered that when they were young, in the early days, they used to play music for each other all night long. They would just play records for each other as this mm-hmm. kind of love language. And I texted Bruce and John late at night, the night before, saying, I'm thinking about, I have this idea that I might just play Bruce a record in the scene. And if I were to do that, I asked Bruce, what song would you play if you were going to try and save your friend's life? And there was this wonderful exchange of a few hours of different ideas of songs. And I listened to each one of them and it didn't quite feel right. And then he sent me this Sam Cooke and the Soul Stirrers song called Last Mile of the Way, which is about this journey through a dark valley.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did. And it's a beautiful kind of alchemy and collaborative thing. And it came from Bruce and Scott. You know, we shot the scene as scripted, and then I asked Scott if I could try something, and he said sure, because he's that kind of filmmaker.
Yeah.
And it captures to me a truth of what the essence of their relationship mm-hmm. is, which is a kind of wordless but unfathomably deep connection and love, and the ability of music to heal,
yeah.
which is what they're all about.
Yeah.
If I walk the pathway of duty, and if I work till the close of the day long, I shall see the great King in all his beauty. When
lovely chatting to Jeremy yesterday, and he was so grateful for your support throughout this process.
Oh,
almost
nice
in a kind of mimicking almost of this relationship that Bruce and John had and have.
Yeah, I'd go further, because I think the goal is that it's not mimicking.
Not at all.
The goal is to actually enact the same dynamics in an embodied way.
Yeah.
And then hopefully that comes across on a cellular level on screen. And it was very easy for me to feel a devotion to Jeremy and a protectiveness of him. You know, I knew what he had to, you know, it's like, it's crazy. He has to play
yeah.
Born in the USA yeah. in Studio A at the power station where Bruce recorded that mm-hmm. song. And Bruce and John are there watching. And Jeremy is not a singer or a musician by training. So what he did in this film is astonishing to me. But I know the pressure that you're under when you're doing something like that. And yeah. so, yeah, I just was there for him in ways that I, you know, that... And part of that is being as unobtrusive as possible.
Yeah.
And just letting him be, but making sure he knows that I'm there. And I think that's what John does for Bruce, too.
Sense of pride from you almost as a way of seeing him.
Oh, I felt very proud of him.
Yeah.
Which sounds patronizing, but I mean it in a genuine way. And awe for him. One of the first encounters I had with John, I went to see them play a show in Denmark. And I got to watch John watch Bruce.
Right.
Of course, I wanted to watch Bruce play, but what I really wanted was to watch John watch Bruce play. And in a way, everything that I needed for the whole role was contained in the expression in John's eyes and in his just the way he watches Bruce play. It's like that level of devotion and awe. And a kind of, just like he would take a bullet for the guy, you know, he just really, in an undiminished way, believes in him and believes in what he is going to give and to the world. And I think that belief has been a kind of catapult for Bruce. I mean, Bruce has his own self-belief. He has to. You can't do that otherwise. But I think John has been like a pillar for him. And so the goal was to try and be a quiet pillar in that way.
You absolutely smash it.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, totally. So great to chat to you. Thank you so much.
To see you.
Yeah, you too.
1, 2, 3, 4.
By Bruce Springsteen, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Scott Cooper, Jeremy Allen White, Odessa Young and Jeremy Strong. My huge thanks to all four for taking the time to talk to us. Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere is on general release now and is so well worth getting along to see. Edith Bowman is the place to find every single episode of the podcast, including a number of conversations that I've had with the boss himself, Bruce Springsteen. Whilst you can also follow us on your socials, we're at Soundtracking UK. We also have a YouTube channel called Soundtracking Extra, which we'd love you to subscribe to and where you'll be able to watch the interviews that you've just heard. Next up then, Will Tracy, the writer, and Yorgos Lanthimos, the director. Join me to talk Begonia. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.